to the fourth case, Huang versus Mukasey.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Thomas Masucci. I represent Ms. Wang and Mr. Dong in their petition for review. Your Honors, the case before us, as is the case in most petitions for review and removal hearings, revolves around the issue of credibility. Normally, credibility problems in these cases arise in two contexts. First would be problematic demeanor. The second, and probably the most common, would be inconsistencies. The case before us, the immigration judge makes absolutely no positive reference one way or another to demeanor of either of the two petitioners. And there is not a whiff of an inconsistency in his analysis of the credibility of these two petitioners. What we're really left with is the judge essentially acknowledging the Korski decision of this court with regard to questionable documents from overseas, saying rather puzzlingly that Korski just doesn't apply to this case.
Well, but I thought what the judge was saying with respect to that, at least, is that in Korski and some other similar cases, the documents in question have been sent to the petitioner, you know, from a relative in the foreign country. The petitioner may contact somebody and say, please send my birth certificate or please send my diploma or whatever. And the petitioner receives it and has no reason to believe that there's anything inauthentic about the document. So the petitioner proffers the document, and then the document examiner says, well, actually, it's questionable. And so we've said, well, you shouldn't draw a negative inference against the petitioner in that situation. Here, though, most, if not all, of the documents in question were documents that these two people said they had. They had retained them. They got them in China. Mr. Dong, apparently, for reasons that Ms. Wooten thought were maybe not persuasive, but whatever, he said he kept it with him the whole year when he was in prison. And so I think what the immigration judge was saying is, if you've had this document all along, then this I don't know anything about it problem doesn't exist, and you should be held responsible for whether it's authentic or not.
That's certainly an important distinction raised in the Korski decision, Your Honor.
Well, and so, you know, even I don't know whether this immigration judge likes Korski or not, but it doesn't really matter because this is a somewhat different situation. And I thought the other thing the immigration judge held rather strongly against your clients was, in fact, the questionable nature of the documents. The examiner testifies, for example, that two of them are artificially aged. They smell like tea. They were discolored like brown. They're brittle, which suggests exposure to high heat. On and on. I mean, this is actually fairly detailed testimony, and the judge says, if you're going to submit inauthentic documents, then I'm going to draw an adverse inference about your credibility.
And certainly the questionable documents, I mean, the examiner stopped short of saying that they were fraudulent. She said that they were not what they appeared to be. Certainly that's a red flag that the immigration judge has to stop and look at.
And how can we say under the standard of review that applies to us that the immigration judge was compelled to reach the opposite conclusion?
I'm sorry, the opposite conclusion being
on
that
credibility.
They,
I mean, the immigration judge ultimately finds that they're not credible. And so I would say on at least the withholding of removal and CAT claims, which aren't subject to this debate about the one-year time frame, the immigration judge says, you know, your allegations aren't credible. There's this evidence in the record that undermines you, and so I don't believe you, and I'm not going to find that these things happened.
Your Honor, the let's call it the chain of custody of the documents in this case is they bear some resemblance to the document in Korski. These were documents that the petitioners admittedly did get and have in their possession in China. However, as Ms. Wang indicated, these documents were not carried to the United States by the petitioners. Rather, the husband's parents mailed them. So it's also very, very interesting that the comments of Ms. Wooten about the physical alteration of these documents, especially with regard to the what she termed artificial aging and the smell of tea, it's interesting. And if you start the analysis with the assumption that there is some attempt on the part of the petitioners to, in fact, make the documents appear to be something that they weren't, well, then that's interesting. But
also, I mean, just to stick with the documents, some of the documents were not the type of thing you would expect a private person to have in his or her custody. The detention report, the summons, these are things that are ordinarily kept by the police. The detention document doesn't seem to have the right kind of red seal. I mean, there were all kinds of problems. And even the abortion document seemed wrong.
The abortion document seemed wrong?
Well, because people typically, according to the Department of State anyway, don't get documents saying, yes, we performed a forced abortion on you.
Right. But, of course, as we argue in our briefs, as I'm sure has been argued many times before the court, the Department of State report is based upon information that is gotten from Chinese officials, and the Chinese government doesn't admit to the fact that there are any forcible abortions at all in China. So we would argue that at least with regard to the abortion certificate, the immigration judge is clearly over-relying on the State Department report. The remainder of the immigration judge's credibility analysis, once we get past the documents, is we argue it's pure speculation regarding practices in China, regarding the motivations of the petitioners, regarding the plausibility of the officials knowing about the marriage, and these are officials in a small rural village in China. These are not tethered to anything meaningful in the record, and I would respectfully argue that the rule of Korski, which is to, as this court said, to not to allow a fraudulent document to bolster otherwise credible testimony. I mean that should be applied. I think in this case the truly credible the truly questionable documents, the summons and the detention certificate, the judge said they go to the heart of the claim. I don't know that they necessarily do. They're certainly very important parts of the claim. But it would seem to me that Korski would have the court just not consider this, not consider those documents, but rather look at the rest of the immigration judge's analysis and the remaining evidence.
Mr. Mascusi, would you speak for a moment to this question of whether it's time barred?
Your Honor, clearly, the weight of precedent on this issue is that the immigration judge, the agency rather, is in a pretty special position regarding this because before the Real ID Act, it was something that was really kind of off the table. We argue that the judge's very, very thin analysis as to why he rejects the testimony of Mrs. Wang regarding the timeliness of her filing the asylum application is an error of law. And that
well, that's not really consistent with our case law, this circuit. We find that to be a factual determination.
Well, the determination of whether someone has... That it's untimely. But if the factual...
In 05, that does raise a question of law.
Well, we, of course, argue that if the act, the immigration law, says that a credible testimony is enough to carry one's burden for the purposes of asylum, then testimony which is arguably credible regarding the one-year issue should be enough. That's the argument.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. McCarthy. Mr. Zanfardino.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Richard Zanfardino on behalf of the respondent. The question for this Court is whether or not the record compels the conclusion that petitioners more likely than not will be persecuted on account of a protected ground if they return to China. The more likely than not standard is the withholding of removal standard, which was the second of the two claims that petitioners sought. That's already a more likely than not standard. This Court has to consider then whether the record compels, as Judge Wood noted, the contrary conclusion. Does the record compel the conclusion that petitioners testified truthfully? Does the record compel these documents were not falsified?
Now, I had a problem with part of the immigration judge's reasoning there. And it's not about the documents, but you mention it in your brief. The immigration judge, as far as I could tell, out of the blue, found implausible the idea that the forced abortion event, where the family planning officials show up at 8 in the morning, they take her to a hospital and she leaves at 10:30, is somehow implausible because it only took, quote unquote, 2.5 hours. I don't know what evidence in the record you have of how long a normal dilation and curettage procedure takes in the United States, what medical evidence was there, what conditions are like in China. Probably wouldn't take very long at all if you stuck a knitting needle inside somebody. Your assumption about the length of time, it seems to me, comes from nowhere.
Well, it's one of the weaker aspects of the immigration judge's decision, candidly.
It's completely weak, I think, because I think 2.5 hours, or let's cut off an hour for travel time, 1.5 hours is not so short a time that without some evidence, I mean, if you had come in with some evidence from a qualified obstetrician saying, oh, you know, these things are never done in less than 5 hours, fine, you know, we can look at evidence, but we shouldn't be letting immigration judges, or we ourselves shouldn't be assuming that we know so much about these procedures that we know that an hour and a half isn't long enough to perform it.
Yes, Your Honor, and if that were the only basis of the immigration judge's decision, it's a much weaker case, candidly, to the Court. But
I think we just have to delete that. The immigration judge holds that against her, and he also holds against her the idea that maybe she's going to have a fine on top of the abortion. But what evidence do we have that a local authority in China might not attempt financial disincentives as well as getting rid of the unwanted child, the government unwanted child?
Well, getting to the first part about dismissing that part of the decision, Your Honor, I think there may be some discussion in the testimony about the distances that it takes to get from her home to where the clinic was performing the procedure. But even beyond that, it was a certain amount of how plausible it ranked in the immigration judge, and reasonable minds can differ on that.
Judge Vinokur, as far as I know, doesn't have an MD. I don't see how he can...
Well, I think
even if it's 15 minutes, I mean, I don't see where the evidentiary support for that statement is in this record.
I think part of the basis from the immigration judge's decision on that part came from a discussion of whether or not she took a bus to where the or how she got home from the clinic. And I think what was compelling to the immigration judge was more the distance traveled versus the time to take the procedure. But Your Honor is completely correct that we don't have an idea about how long these procedures take, and it's one of the unfortunate assumptions that immigration judges have to make when they are trying to glean credibility.
They can at least create, if it's these forced abortion cases, they can at least create a data point for themselves by getting testimony from this country. I mean, I'm sure it's probably available. You know, we get all manner of abortion cases, and there's testimony out there that could be gotten. This isn't unknowable information. Now, maybe it would be different in China somehow, but at least you have some idea. It's not like trying to clip an aneurysm in the brain where you've got, you know, all sorts of precautions that go along with procedures. It just weakens the immigration judge's opinion when they throw in these off-the-cuff, completely unsupported statements.
Yes, Your Honor, and it does reflect a certain amount of trying to really glean from a witness who's testifying, oftentimes with no corroborating evidence, whether or not they're telling the truth. In this case, we had the petitioners did bring in evidence to bolster their claim. And as you alluded, when petitioner's counsel was speaking, it is a bit of a sliding scale. As someone's testifying, if they have no corroborating evidence, but their credibility is so strong, they give specific detailed testimony, corroborating evidence isn't available for them, it weakens the need to have corroboration. Whether testimony begins to falter or they proffer doctored documents, their testimony is held to a higher standard.
Sure. No, and I think I take that point. I think it's a valid one. The other place, though, that the immigration judge was making assumptions that I, for off the cuff myself, if we're in the off the cuff business, you know, I didn't think made much sense, is the immigration judge finds it incredible that it's the husband who keeps getting summoned, that it's the husband who is held accountable for this, not the wife. And, you know, I wish every country were 100% egalitarian, but there are, in fact, a lot of countries where husbands are regarded as the head of the household and where it would be very logical for the public authorities to look to the husband. And, again, maybe some evidence would be helpful, but I don't see why the immigration judge should say, well, I think it's incredible that the petitioner Dong would be summoned to the Public Security Bureau when Wang was the one who became pregnant. Well, of course she's the one who becomes pregnant. She's the wife, you know, but I don't know what it is about Chinese culture that says it wouldn't be the husband who would be summoned.
Yes, Your Honor, and also he was the one who fled, at least for the week that he was gone.
Sure, so he seems to have thought he was in some danger. I understand your point about the documents. I understand your point that credibility can be undermined if you're trying to bolster a case with things that turn out to look really phony, which is what the document examiner thought. But it's a closer case than it needed to be.
It is, and unfortunately, I think that there may have been, with the documents pervading much of the claim, the documents weren't just a separate part. They actually undermine the entire claim, and they're actually served throughout the testimony to bolster aspects of the claim. When she receives the fine receipt, which is part of her testimony, that fine receipt refers to her having an early birth, but no child was born of this. And so all the way from the beginning right down to the detention notice, which he claims that he had, which Petitioner Dong claims he had the original of and kept in his cell for a year, these documents run under their testimony as they're giving this testimony. I think it may have pervaded throughout their testimony so much that it does undercut what might otherwise be a testimony where reasonable minds may differ.
Do we know anything about the Chinese word for birth, whether it means dead birth or live birth?
That's not on the record, Your Honor. I'm sorry. Just quickly touching on the one-year bar issue that was brought up earlier, the one-year bar issue was not raised to the board, first and foremost. The board specifically noted that in their decision, that it wasn't challenged. That's a flat-out failure to exhaust, even beyond this court's decision in Vasile, which pointed out that petitioners can't simply create jurisdiction for themselves by shoehorning an issue where they'd like to have it. The case really does turn on withholding of removal, which, as the Court has noted, is almost a double standard, a double level of review here, because it's already more likely than not, and it's that this Court has to be compelled to conclude otherwise it was reached below. We've touched on many of the same issues. Unless there are any other questions, we'd submit on the arguments in our brief.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Zanfardino. Mr. Massuzzi, your time has expired, but you may have an additional minute.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Just with regard to the burden in a withholding case, it is more likely than not, but as I'm sure the Court knows, in cases where petitioner can't establish that there was past persecution, there is a rebuttable presumption that there would be future persecution, and that therefore the prospective proof of likelihood of persecution would not have to be, you know, explored in detail. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.